The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Welcome back to another reading of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina for September 2023. Take the scenic route has been our theme this month. We're going to talk about a little different kind of a scenic route today. We're going to start with an article entitled Soak in the Trees. In the forests around Asheville, bathing in the serenity and beauty of the pines and oaks and walnut trees make it feel as though time stands still, written by Eleanor Spicer Rice. My mother and I have been looking forward to our forest bathing appointment for weeks. We're late. I curse as I make another wrong turn while driving through the North Carolina Arboretum in Asheville. Eleanor! This is supposed to be relaxing, I yell. It would be more relaxing if you wouldn't use that language, my mother says. Exactly what language would be appropriate here, lady? I think as my mother folds the unread arboretum map in her lap, I make another wrong turn. It'll be fine, she says more gently. We have time. When we pull into the parking lot to meet our forest bathing group, our guide, Krista Hebel from Asheville Wellness Tours, greets us with an open kindness, hands us a pair of sit-upons, and tells us that she's glad we came to bathe in the forest with her. And before you get any ideas, forest bathing doesn't involve any actual bath-taking. Instead, it's about bathing your senses in the whole of a forest with the help of a certified guide. The goal is to let down your walls and release yourself of the worries of the man-made world. In Japan, this is called Shinrin Yoku, or forest bath. It's been medically prescribed as part of Japan's national health program since the 1980s. Today, some North Carolina doctors prescribe time in nature, too. Something about walking among the trees can release us from the daily stressors that twine and tighten inside of us. It turns out that forest bathing can lower your blood pressure and heart rate and increase your mental and emotional well-being. Chemicals from trees can boost our immune systems. Forest bathing can increase self-esteem and reduce stress. This is good news for North Carolinians, because our state ranks fourth in the nation in total forested area. More than half of our state remains forested, and more than 1 million acres are national forests, open to all who want to wander. Our group of nine wanders behind Hebel. We hail from at least 4 home states, and our ages span more than 50 years between the youngest and oldest of us. Most of us are strangers to one another. We reach the threshold of the woods, where trees touch tips to make a tunnel, separating cultivated arboretum from the wild woods that border Pisgah National Forest. Here, Hebel asks us to pick up a piece of nature and leave it there as a gesture symbolizing that we are leaving something behind on our journey. My mind starts racing. What am I supposed to leave behind? Should it be something big? Fears or anxieties? Should it be something smaller? my annoyance with myself for being late, the franticness of schedules, appointments, arguments. What is Mama leaving behind? What about these strangers? I missed the opportunity. I put a pine cone next to the threshold, like everyone else, but can't slow my brain enough to figure out what else I'm leaving here. Welcome, Hebel says, as we enter the woods. We have time here. Forest bathing with Hebel is a series of invitations followed by a walk in the woods. In each invitation, we gather. As we pass around a piece of the forest, a twig or a pine cone or a leaf, we share a bit of what we found. Hebel guides her flock with intentions that we try to set for ourselves. Taste the air. Listen. She invites us to cup our hands at our ears to focus the sound, to turn our cupped hands to face behind us, and hear sounds all around. From one direction we hear birds and insects, whirs and trills coming from beings made invisible by the lush growth. When we turn our heads to face behind us, we hear the splash and murmur of water from an unseen brook. Hebel teaches us to walk as though we are kissing the earth with our feet, a nod to Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh. Touch the textures of the natural world. Look for its colors, its light and shadow. What we are not doing, I learn, is hiking. We miss a lot while we're hiking, Hebel says. I always knew it, I think. I loathe hiking, mostly because it's a form of exercise disguised as enjoying nature. What we also are not doing is taking a naturalist walk. I learned this while bent over some wild ginger trying to figure out which cranefly species is mating on its leaves. Forest bathing drops us out of our analytic minds to remind us of the whole of what we are, Hebel says. Nuts, I think as I write myself, walking around nature looking for things is my favorite activity. Slow our hectic pace, Hebel tells us. Even the squirrels do that. I can be a squirrel and slow my hectic pace. A squirrel among the riot of mountain laurel and rhododendron, the sourwood trees with bark like crocodile hides, the hornets and ground beetles, a squirrel with her mother who quoted Robert Frost at our first invitation to share with the group. A squirrel who's not late, one who has lots of time. I know a secret about the forest. Its time is very different from our time. Under the ground, filaments of fungi, called mycelium, bind to tree roots. They spread from root to root, tree to tree, living hairs that connect the woods. Through these hairs, the trees talk to each other, take care of each other. Robust mother trees can feed those who are hungry. They can coddle their saplings, encourage them to grow. Using chemicals in the air, they also cry out to each other. When we cut one down, remaining trees can still send the chopped tree the food that it can no longer make for itself. They make nutrients with their leaves and send them to their old friend underground. They take their time, take care, and they don't forget. In this way, they keep their fallen friend alive. There is joy in grief, Hebel says. Grief in joy. The trees take their time for each other, even as we walk quietly among. Every footstep affects 300 miles worth of mycelium beneath the ground. The trees know we are here. They could tell each other if they wanted to. We gather treasures from the forest, relishing textures and colors. I pick up a foreign piece of lichen, ruffled and leathery. Others find leaves, rocks, bark, and tumbled laurel blossoms. As our walk comes to an end, we place our forest treasures in a pile between us next to a creek. Waterways work like mycelium. This creek flows to the French Broad River, heads north to the Tennessee and Ohio rivers, and on out to the sea. What messages are carried there? What of our few minutes together will remain by the time it reaches the Atlantic? We stand under the trees with the light around us changing as a gentle breeze shifts and sways the leaves above. We came from different places, but for a few minutes we are together under the trees, connected by this experience that we shared. How far will these moments follow us after we leave? We complete our forest bath with a tea ceremony. Hebel brews us tea from white pine needles. She pours a cup onto the ground for those who couldn't be with us, and one for the forest itself. The whole of the forest, not just the crane flies and ginger, not just the sourwood trees and mountain laurel, the sound of birds, of footsteps, of water tumbling over rocks, the occasional hikers and dogs. They're part of this, too. No cell phone notifications, no wondering which species, just a wholeness of fullness. We have time, Hebel tells us, the same thing my mother said when we were running late. It was the same thing Hebel was saying when I couldn't figure what parts of my own small life to leave behind. We have time for each other, time taken and time given, but we also have the unmeasured spools of forest time, a time that leaps clear of speculation and bathes us only in what is. We have time for peace. Eleanor Spicer Rice lives in Raleigh with her family and thousands of miles of mycelium. To learn more about forest bathing with Asheville Wellness Tours, call 828-407-0711 or visit AshevilleWellnessTours.com. And now, beyond the skyline. On a spiritual journey through Durham, the pilgrimage of pain and hope peels back the layers of the city, revealing chapters of its history that are not always visible from the surface. Written by Karen Langley Martin. I lean against the trunk of a loblolly pine and watch the Eno River toss sunlight over boulders. I discover this trail within a few weeks of moving to Durham, and for several years I hiked here simply appreciating its natural beauty. The trees, water, rocks, and turtles were a welcome change from my suburban neighborhood. But never once did I wonder about the history of this place that I enjoyed so much. It never crossed my mind to ask, who lived here? Why is it called the Eno? Then something happened to change the way I saw not only my favorite hiking area, but also many of the places that I visit on a regular basis. When I first heard about the Durham Pilgrimage of Pain and Hope, I thought that it would be a historical tour of the city. Being new to the area and coming from the Northeast, I signed up hoping to learn more about Southern history and culture. Right away, the organizers corrected my misperception. This is not a tour, they emphasized. It's a pilgrimage. I didn't really understand what that meant at the time, but I quickly learned. I squeezed my eyes shut for a moment and listened to the Eno gurgling over rocks, and I think back to that first stop on the pilgrimage. What is your favorite place in Durham? It seems like an innocent question meant to break the ice among this group of 12 strangers who are about to spend the weekend together on the pilgrimage of pain and hope. The man across the table doesn't look familiar to me from our orientation meeting last week. He's wearing a Marine veteran baseball cap and a necklace strung with what looks to be claws from a large animal. I glance at my itinerary. He's John Blackfeather Jeffries, a member of the Okinichi Band of the Saponi Nation. He's listed as our first storyteller. But first, the icebreaker. One by one, my fellow pilgrims share their favorite spots in Durham. A burger place, a tapas restaurant, an ice cream shop. When it's my turn, I say, the Eno River. I love taking my dog hiking there. Jeffries locks his eyes on me. In a low, unhurried voice, he says, I am the Eno River. The Eno River is me. I try to listen as he talks about his Okinichi ancestors who joined the Eno and other Sioux tribes and built their towns on the banks of the Eno River, but I have a hard time focusing. His response plays and repeat in my mind. I am the Eno River. The Eno River is me. We're less than an hour in, and I can understand why this is not going to be a simple history tour that I expected. Dust particles swirl in the dim air. Now we're on the second stop of the pilgrimage, historic Stagville, a preserved remnant of one of North Carolina's largest plantations. We're standing shoulder to shoulder in a cabin that once housed enslaved people. Three or four families lived here at a time, the Stagville guide says. Our group is quiet and somber as we wander the property. On the chimney outside the cabin, I run my thumb along the ridges of bricks made on site by people enslaved here and press my finger into the groove of a fingerprint. Who were you? I wonder about the person who made the print. Was this an accident, or did you leave your mark here on purpose? One of our group members is an African-American woman who looks to be in her mid-70s. What must this be like for her, I wonder? Three generations away from the people who lived here, enslaved and mistreated. What must this be like for him? I wonder about Jeffries, who was with us on the plantation tour. I drive home from Stagville, a mere 15 minutes from my neighborhood, with its landscaped lawns and two-story homes that are 20 times the size of that cabin. 15 minutes, three generations. I am the Eno River. My stomach feels like I swallowed a brick. Sweat trickles down the back of my neck. It's Saturday, the second day of our pilgrimage, and the July morning is off to a simmering start. Past and present collide as we walk around downtown Durham. Here is Parrish Street, home to my favorite burger joint, and once a thriving hub for black-owned businesses known as Black Wall Street. Here, just across the train tracks from the Tapas Restaurant, that was someone's answer to the favorite spot in Durham question, is the former home of the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company, founded for black people at a time when other insurance companies wouldn't offer policies to the community. And here we are at One City Center, downtown's tallest building. I pull out my water bottle and tilt my head to look up 27 stories. Hundreds of people live in these brand new apartments. I wonder how many of them know the story we just heard, that a Woolworths used to be on this spot, and that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. visited here in 1960, a week after the store shut down its lunch counter in response to a wave of sit-in protests happening across the South. After lunch, we meet Virginia Williams, who in 1957 was arrested with six others for sitting in the whites-only section at the Royal Ice Cream Parlor on the corner of Roxborough and Dowd Streets. Someone from our group calls her brave, and Williams waves a hand dismissively. I was young, she says. I didn't know enough to be afraid. Now my own past and present collide. I'm in seventh grade regurgitating memorized facts for a quiz on the civil rights movement. I'm sitting 3 feet away from a woman whose name could be an answer on that quiz. Question among the Royal Seven who helped ignite lunch counter sit-ins throughout the South, who was the last member still residing in Durham. Answer, Virginia Williams. The concept of a pilgrimage is a millennia-old practice, says Reynolds Chapman, director of Durham Cares, the nonprofit that runs the Durham Pilgrimage of Pain and Hope. We go places for lots of reasons, business, research, education, leisure. On a pilgrimage, you go to listen and learn. You go to be transformed, to encounter God. I sure am listening and learning a lot. The rest of the weekend is packed. Over a pasta dinner at the Haiti Heritage Center, I learn how the construction of the Durham Freeway in 1970 displaced hundreds of black-owned businesses. At a panel with Durham leaders, I learn about the discriminatory practice of redlining. During a group reflection time, I listen as a fellow pilgrim shares a memory from her first-grade classroom. White students line up here, black students over here. During lunch at the Latino Community Credit Union, I learn that immigrants to Durham are far more likely to be robbed because thieves know they often have jobs that pay cash and don't have bank accounts. I went into this evening, or weekend rather, thinking it would be a history lesson, but it's so much more. The Pilgrimage of Pain and Hope is a heart-wrenching look at how past injustice crashes into the present. It's a chance to hear stories that aren't often told. It's an intense time of personal reflection, and it's well named. There is tremendous pain in Durham's story. Native people are plundered, Africans are enslaved, black people are displaced, immigrants are robbed. Generation after generation, people mistreat one another. And there is hope. Jeffries helped lead an initiative to rebuild a replica of his Native American village along the Eno River. Williams and the Royal Seven sparked a movement. Neither Jeffries nor Williams betrays a shred of bitterness when they tell their stories. Instead, they remain hopeful for a Durham's future. Generation after generation, people demonstrate resilience. My hope for the pilgrimage is that the people of Durham find a way to be in community with our neighbors in a way that's not abstract or reduced to generalizations and labels, Chapman says. I hope it helps church and people of faith encounter the city with a posture of listening and learning, to see with empathy, to see the land as sacred. Back on the Eno River Trail, I can hear Jeffrey's words in my mind, I am the Eno River. The Eno River is me. I've recently learned that Jeffrey's died earlier this year, and it surprises me how sad news makes me feel. I did not know him at all, but I'll always remember him and think of him when I walk these trails. No one could have grounded our pilgrimage like Elder Blackfeather, Chapman says. We have all learned so much from him, and he will be sorely missed. Before continuing my hike, I press my palms into the chunky bark of the loblolly tree. These trees have stood through it all. They've seen the pain that past generations have endured, and the hope that carries us forward. Durham Cares is at 112 Broadway Street in Durham, durhamcares.org. Visit their website for information about the Durham Pilgrimage of Pain and Hope. We've just got about 3 minutes left, and I'm going to do something I rarely get a chance to do, read the quiz at the beginning of our state. This one's called Star Light, Star Bright. Across North Carolina, observatories, planetariums, and astronomy clubs teach us about the science, history, and lore of our night sky. Written by Alan Hodge. Question number one. The Bear Dark Sky Observatory at Maryland Community College has the largest telescope dedicated to public use in North Carolina. Near which town, the seat of Yancey County, is the observatory located? Burnsville, Asheville, or Cherokee? Burnsville. Many astronauts, including Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong, trained at Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center, the largest full-dome planetarium in the state, before traveling to space. At which university is the center located? A. Duke, B. University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, or C. North Carolina State? The answer is B. UNC Chapel Hill. The James H. Lynn Planetarium at the Shiel Museum is the second largest in North Carolina. This facility features a 360-degree domed facility for realistic out-of-this-world presentations and is located in which city in Gaston County? A. Albemarle, B. Kings Mountain, or C. Gastonia? And C. Gastonia is the answer. Number four. In 1981, radio astronomer Barbara A. Williams became the first black woman to earn a Ph.D. in astronomy. Williams received her undergraduate degree in physics from which school was formerly known as the Woman's College of the University of North Carolina? A. Guilford College, B. University of North Carolina, Greensboro, or C. Barber Scotia College? The answer is B. UNC Greensboro. The $10 billion James Webb Space Telescope is named for the Granville County native who was NASA's second appointed administrator. Webb grew up in which community whose name is a traditional fox hunting shout? A. Tally Ho, B. Heel, C. Holoa. And the answer is A. Tally Ho. The Museum of Coastal Carolina's Ingram Planetarium offers programs that explore how ancient cultures interpreted the stars, what it takes to become an astronaut, and more. This facility is located at Sunset Beach in which county? A. New Hanover, B. Pender, C. Brunswick. The answer is C. Brunswick. Finally, the Crystal Coast Stargazers Astronomy Club meets monthly at Carteret Community College. This group was formed and still holds public stargazing events at which antebellum fort and state park? A. Fisher, B. Macon, or C. Branch? And the answer is B. Macon. Well, that's about all the time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Brett Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.